All right, good morning. I'll call over to the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting and I need to turn on my microphone for this Tuesday, August 8th. I can't believe we're already in August. August 8th, 2017, at 10 a.m. And I'd ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again and good morning. And before we do public comment, I do have to take just a moment to recognize Austin Harrington. This will be his last meeting covering us. Austin's done a phenomenal job. Those of you who read his work of really digging in and covering the board and trying to understand what's been going on. Austin, we want you to know, I know there's a separation between us and the media, and it's appropriate, but we really appreciate what you've done in your time with the Trib, and we wish you luck as you move on to bigger and better things. So, absolutely, good luck. Public comment number one, this is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come right on up to the microphone. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, first item is Knapp Tedesco Annual Insurance Review. Steve, Andrew, and maybe Susan. Will we get you up there, Susan?
I'm fine, right?
Okay, all right.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for placing us on the agenda and giving us an opportunity to provide some comments about your annual insurance review for Story County. As Chairman Sanders mentioned, I'm joined by Andrew Rickliff and Susan Hosher, and they'll answer questions and help us through the presentation this morning. We've got a PowerPoint we thought we'd walk through, and here's the agenda, and we can do this fairly quickly. And for those in the audience that want a paper copy, I've got some extra paper copies if you'd like to take one with you. But, Andrew, if you go to the agenda, I thought we'd spend a few minutes talking about the claims process and a review of prior claims. For privacy reasons, we've not provided any names of any specific employees, but thought we'd look back over the past 12 months. And then also, I think Supervisor Olson, you asked maybe 6 months ago about for some more detail on claims. And we've got some more detail today. Members of the Safety Committee have asked for the same information. And subject to how this goes today, I'm going to provide that to the Safety Committee tomorrow. Then we talk a little bit about workers' compensation, and we'll show you what your experience modification rate is doing. Just a little bit of a snapshot on coverage. I'll show you the premium summary and then just some closing comments on safety. So if we go to the next slide, just a reminder, the county is on a July 1, same as your fiscal year, July 1 to June 31, a year on your insurance. And this is a look back on just work comp claims over the past 12 months and of the prior insurance year. And you'll see that there were a total of 16 claims. 13 of those were paid. I apologize, the number doesn't show up really well, but about $37,000 in expenses were paid on those 13 claims. Most of those were medical expense-only claims. I don't believe there are any indemnity claims in there or permanent impairment claims. There are three open claims, and the $58,000 represents what we call the reserve. And so those are claims yet to be settled. They're waiting on treatment, perhaps physician's orders, whatever the case may be, perhaps even a determination of some sort of impairment. And it doesn't mean that $58,000 will be paid out in full, simply what the carrier has reserved for those three outstanding claims. If you go to the next slide, these are all other claims. These are non-work comp claims. These would typically be property damage, general liability claims, non-employees that may slip and fall or whatever the case may be. And this is a good chart. There were a total of 11 claims that have been submitted over the past 12 months, and only three of those have been paid. So what we typically recommend to staff is that when there's a claim submitted to us, doesn't mean the carrier is always going to pay on that. It may not be any liability on behalf of the county, but at least submit them to us. And so there are 11 total claims. Three were paid, $15,000 in total claims expense, if you will. And I might mention one of the three claims was some damage to an overpass, about $11,000 of damage to an overpass. The other two were very minor vehicle claims. So it's a good indication there are not a lot of claims that are non-work comp claims for the county. So here's the next chart. I thought we'd dig just a little deeper here and look back over the past 5 years and tell you where the trends are, where the frequency is, and I'm going to tell you as we get to the end, I don't know that we see any specific trends here as we look at this and dissect this, but I'll just walk through this fairly quickly in case members of the audience can't see the color or the numbers inside the colors. But so again, over the past 5 years, 8 eye claims, and so there'd be a situation where maybe some form of a chemical or dust or something was came into the employee's eye, and there was a work comp claim. 4 bite claims. This could be an animal bite claim, animal control, perhaps a bite in the justice center or jail. And you'll see in a minute that's not a big dollar amount. 22 slip and fall, probably the most common claim that we see when there are large public entities like this with a lot of employees moving in and out of facilities, doing a lot of different things. But 22 slip and fall. I'm going to skip over miscellaneous for a minute. 14 overexertion. Those are physical exertion, a strain, a lifting claim of some sort. And then 13 cut claims. And you'll see in a minute those cut claims do not amount to much. But they are submitted to us. And then miscellaneous is the big number, 48 claims. And I'll give you just a little more detail as we get into that in a minute. So next slide. And here's the dollar amount. Sure.
I have a question then. So for the working comp claims up there and what you're counting here, do you count the total amount including the doctor fees, or do you count just what's paid to the employee?
No. So we include the dollar amount paid for medical expenses, which would be to the physician, the hospital, the clinic, perhaps physical therapy, and also the indemnity or impairment claim paid to the employee, or for time off, for that matter. So, yes, it's all included, Lars. Good question. So here's the dollar amount for those claims, just this slide kind of moving forward here. And the eye claims, about $4,500 over 5 years. The bite claims, which, you know, sound worse than they are, the bite worse than the bark maybe, but $1,000 of total expenditures over the past 5 years. Not a significant amount. Slip and fall, those can be costly, and sometimes those do result in a little bit of impairment if someone's got some strain or some permanent back injury or whatever the case may be, about $84,000. Again, skipping over miscellaneous for a minute. Overexertion claims, about $18,000, and then cut claims, about $2,900. The miscellaneous claims are the biggest piece of that pie chart. As you can see, it's $101,000. And if we roll forward to the next slide, then here's where those miscellaneous claims occur. And the total dollars in that pie chart add up to the prior amount of $101,000. And this is interesting. And again, I don't know that we see any particular trends. You know, if you look at the colors on the chart, you don't see any one pie that's larger, piece of the pie that's larger than the others. The percentages in there, I want to just clarify, the percentages are the percentages of claims by frequency, the dollar amounts or the dollar amounts paid out. So let me just roll through these. Of those miscellaneous claims, outdoor rashes, a lot of conservation claims there, but not a big dollar amount, $1,200. Burn claims, about $576. Exposure to bodily fluids, $2,600. Here's the biggest dollar amount. Training exercises, primarily related to the Sheriff's Department, $55,000.
And it's the one item up there that we may be able to have some impact on. Some of those things, you know, there's not a lot we're going to be able to do. They're going to occur when they occur. But our training exercises, and not just looking at the sheriff, but all of our training exercises, we may need to spend just a little more time making sure that we're taking all the steps necessary.
I think, Rick, that's the one recommendation we're going to make when we get to the end. Now, there are representatives in the Sheriff's Department that attend safety committee meetings, and we do communicate with the sheriff and his staff a lot, but there may be an opportunity there for, as you said, Rick, a few more training safety exercises. Not a fault car accident, $6,600. Pain from police or guard activity, about $9,000. A bump, a scrape, a tweak, about $7,200. And then some other claims, about $19,000. I think one of those was a steam that sprayed on an employee. I think we had a cough that was due to something that they were exposed to, but those are all in the other category, about $19,000. So there's a little bit of a look back. Again, I think as we look at it, we don't see a lot of trends, if you will. Maybe that those training exercises were the largest dollar amount, but otherwise, this is the sort of a claim activity you would expect to see for an organization like this employs a lot of folks doing a lot of different things.
Where do we sit as far as the other people that you insure with similar, with other municipalities?
Actually, I'm going to show you that.
You're one step ahead of me, Lars.
So here's a really great chart, too, and I'll show this to the Safety Committee tomorrow. But if you go back to 2012-13, we had about 28 work comp claims. So these are work comp only claims submitted. That number reduced to 24, went to 20 in 14-15. It spiked just a little bit in the last.
You'll call that a spike?
Just a gradual trend or uphill or something. But then last year, 16 claims. So if you look at that, a reduction of 12 claims, was that 40%? A really, really nice reduction over the past 5 years. And I'll mention when we get to the end here why I believe that is. So then here's a couple other charts. Here's the amount of work comp claims by year. And, if you go back to the early 2012-2013 years, those numbers were fairly low. Rick, they did spike a little bit in 14-15, about $68,000 of paid claims. We actually still have 15,000 in reserve. I think it's just one claim going back to 14-15. 15-16 closed out with just a few paid claims and nothing in reserve. And then you can see where we're at based on the prior fiscal year, 37,000. This sinks back to the very first slide, 37,000 paid claims, 58,000 reserve. Again, doesn't mean that 58,000 will pay out in total. That it may be less, it could be more, but I think those are properly reserved. But again, just starting back at 14-15, 68, down to 40, the following year down to 37, a good
show. And just so that everybody's clear, because nobody else was here, up here anyway at this point, but 12-13, 13-14, comparing that to 14-15 is not a fair comparison, because that is about the time that we put in our new systems and processes to really track these things. Alyssa's done a phenomenal job getting going on that. But I'm not saying that what it would look like in 12-13 or 13-14, but it's important to note that we had a different system for identifying and tracking those things on those 2 years.
Yep. So the next slide, a very good point. Here's the next slide. So we talk a lot in our business, and I think we do with you as well, about experience modification rates. The experience modification rate, without going into a lot of detail, is a function of your accident history. And so there's a formula. You look at actual losses, and you divide that by expected losses, and then payroll enters into that. And it's a very important rate to look at. It also drives your premium, as you'll see here in a minute. But this question came up at the Safety Committee meeting, and I think Alyssa mentioned this a month or so ago when we met. Go back to 12-13, it was 0.84. It still was a very respectable rate, and ideally you want to be at 1.00 or below. You want to try never to be above 1.00 because you pay more premium and it puts you a little bit on the radar. So it was a very respectable rate back in 2012, but look at what it's done. It went to 7.8, went to 6.1, it got to the ultimate low and 15-16 at 0.59. I think at that time we were very close to the minimum experience modification rate that you could have in the state based on the payroll. I think it might have been 0.58 or something like that, and it was a terrific rate. It went up a little bit in 0.64, but I'll tell you why it did. The community life payroll came off the system, and when you take that payroll off the system, then you're going to have a little bit of an increase. And so it went from 5.9 to 6.4, and it went up this past year to 6.7 due to some claim activity. But again, it's still a very good rate. We've actually projected the mod for next year, which is the current year we're in, that'll be the following year, and it'll be 0.71. But I'm here to tell you that 0.71, 0.67 is in the top five counties in the state of Iowa, and it's a terrific rate. It's a good thing to manage, and it's a good trend that we see as we look back.
And so, see, the only other thing that I would note, as you rightly mentioned, that we lose kind of the benefit that we were getting from having CLP.
That's
we
correct.
We haven't lost all the potential detriment from CLP. We're still dealing with that a little bit, and I would expect to see another little correction, depending on how things go, as we move all the way to the end of maintaining liability for some of the CLP.
Very good point, Rick. With that payroll came claims, too, and we've still got a few follow-ons, but eventually that'll fall off. So, again, this is probably the most positive chart in the aside from the premium summary, but this is a very, very good trend for Story County and something you should be proud of. And I think I wrote an article for the county newsletter a couple years ago. Leanne published that. It's something we should probably do again because it's a real tribute to the employees.
And
so.
Steve mentioned you're in the top five for counties, but just general industry, it's the top 1%. I mean, a mod that low, you don't see.
Unheard of.
In the industry. And so it's very good.
I thought I'd just take a real quick, this is just more information than anything. We don't spend a lot of time at this level going over coverages. That could be a couple-hour meeting. And so just thought you'd be interested in seeing what the total coverages were for the county. We have about $63 million in insurable assets or insurable values, almost $50 million in buildings. Personal property is always a little bit misleading. That really is content, so furniture, fixtures, things of that nature. It's contents as opposed to personal property, but about $4.2 million. Computer hardware, which is EDP, about $1.9 million. And that's something we talked about at the review with staff, as we might want to take another look at that at some point soon here and see if that's properly insured. Fine arts, that sounds like art on the wall, and it may be, but it's statues, cannons, things of that nature, about $450,000. There's miscellaneous property scheduled primarily for the, I believe that these are tractors, equipment, $5.9 million. And then we've got some unscheduled miscellaneous property, about $400,000 for the sheriff's office, $170,000 for the conservation, and some miscellaneous adds up to about $651,000. 173 vehicles. We actually insure, as you may know, we insure the volunteers in there. So the sheriff has a number of volunteers. I think there are many other volunteers. Those are all insured on the policy. And then about $15.8 million in payroll, which is a decrease from prior years due to the community life. So here's a final slide, and then I'll make some comments and wrap up here. Here's the renewal for the 17-18 year. As you can see, $408,000. And as you look back over the prior years, that's a decrease of about 7.5% over the prior year, and a similar about 6.5% over the year 15-16. So a very nice renewal. A reminder, ICAP insures the liability, the property, the contents, and then IMWCA handles the work comp, and both were very, very good renewals. The ICAP premium, you receive a voucher from them as being a part of that pool. It was about $31,000. It reduced that premium. And then at our mid-year review, and I think maybe at our last review, we talked about a process whereby ICAP came in with an organization called Valuations Northwest, and they looked at all the building values to make certain, in essence, they appraised them to make certain they were insured properly. There were 14 buildings that they made comment on. I think 11 of those were needed to be increased. Three, they recommended decreases, very minor decreases. So with this renewal, we made those adjustments. And so all those have been reflected. All the proposed and recommended insured values have been reflected with this renewal. We thought it was a good time to do it when rates were trending as they were. And it was about $6.6 million in additional insured value, I think, we took on this facility and a handful of other facilities. So a good recommendation on ICAP and Valuations Northwest, and that is done, and we'll go forward. And then here's the final thing I'd say on the IMWCA work comp premium. Your gross premium before adjustments was $471,000. And then through a series of discounts, we reduced it by $332,000, which is obviously a big number. Your experience modification rate, again, here's where this comes into play, reduced it by 33% off the top. So again, 1.00 minus that 0.67, you had a 33% discount. That was $155,000. You have a longevity and loss experience credit, which says, in essence, IMWCA is going to reward you for having a low loss history in the past. That reduced it by $142,000. And then you have what's called a good experience bonus. And it can be a maximum of 20%. It was 18% last year. This year we received the maximum $35,000. And so $332,000 in discounts resulted in a really nice renewal. And again, about 7.5% decrease overall premium. So in closing, let me just say, if you look back at all those charts, work comp and non-work comp claims are decreasing. Total work comp claims over the past 5 years have decreased by about 40%. No significant trends. Maybe we can spend a little more time talking about some of those training exercises, but no trends of significance that we see. Paid work comp claims are decreasing. Your experience mod is decreasing, and the overall premium this year decreased by 7.5%. So it is a tribute to this board primarily, but also the staff and the safety committee for their focus on safety. There's a culture here that we're certainly proud of, and you should be proud of too, that's always looking toward workplace safety, risk management, and we're just really pleased to be a part of that. And I'll stop at that and be happy to answer any questions.
Well, first of all, we're so pleased to be a part of it. The relationship between Story County and Knapp Tedesco that goes back way before any of Susan, maybe you were around when, but way before any of the rest of us sitting here, has always been an outstanding relationship. But I don't think it's ever been better than it is right now. I don't think the county's ever realized better service than we're getting right now.
Thank
and
you.
A lot of the positives that you're talking about are absolutely attributable to Knapp Tedesco. Question I have for you, and then I'll open it up to the other board members, is now a reasonable time, and is there enough potential benefit that it's worth exploring increasing some of our deductibles, taking a little more of what we see as pretty manageable risk upon ourselves? We have the cash flow and the reserves to be able to do something like that if there's a savings to the taxpayers of Story County. You got any thoughts on that?
The answer is yes, Rick. This is a fairly traditional structure. You've got very low deductibles,
right.
And I think a trend that we see both in the public and private sector, and we insure other public sector entities, is a little more self-insurance, if you will, a little more attention toward managing your premiums by taking a higher deductible, if you will, and I think it's absolutely the time to talk about that. It's a trend. It's appropriate thing to do. You've got the history to prove it, that you can manage your claims and claim activity. I think it's absolutely a time, and I'd maybe defer to Andrew because I think we've
I think it's something we can lay out to you, and then from there you guys can decide as a board if it's worth. I mean, obviously there's going to be premium savings. We don't know what that looks like today, but we can lay out the options to you. But I mean, the foundation is built. I mean, you guys, your safety record is every year it's good. I mean, there's no outliers. Yeah, if you were asking us recommendation, I definitely would recommend you guys look at higher deductibles in the future.
I think we'd like to spend a little time working through that. Maybe at our mid-year review, that'd be a good topic of conversation.
Yeah, so I mean, let's just make sure Marty and Loris are okay with that. But my suggestion would be that we ask you guys to put together what that would look like for us.
Certainly.
And when you come back mid-year review, just lay out the options for us.
No, I think I'm more than a little pleased. I had checked with an insurance agent in my family about the experience mod rate and where we're going. And it reflects a well-run organization. We just got told that we're one of the best in the state of Iowa. The fact that we're fiscally solvent and prudent, I would have to say if there's the ability for some cash on additional dollars, I would welcome the conversation. I look forward to it in 6 months.
Laura's thoughts?
I would like to see those numbers also.
Sure.
Definitely, but I want to reiterate thank you to the staff, because I know, and thank you to the department heads and to our directors, because that is where safety happens. Other than these stumbling over things once in a while, and I'm kind of joking, but I'm a klutz. It happens out in the field. It happens with the staff. So thank you to the staff.
Yeah, Loris, I think that's completely appropriate and accurate. So our safety committee deserves so much credit, and there's so many who deserve some of the credit. But the reality is, when you look at how things have gone in Story County in terms of the way we operate with claims, the way we operate with our personnel, it should be no surprise to anybody that the positive line for the way Story County is really doing things, not to disparage anything that was done before, but we've gone to a whole new level. It occurs at exactly the time that we hired Alyssa Wignall to come in and run our HR department. They aren't accidental correlation. It's a direct result.
Thank you, Alyssa, too. And yeah, looking forward to see the numbers.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the opportunity. And thank you for the relationship.
We value
really
our relationship
appreciate
with
that.
You guys so much.
Forward
people to Story County are lucky that we have this relationship. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chris, you want to put those lights back on so I can actually see? Thanks. Next is consideration of minutes from August 1st.
Move to approve.
I would second.
Motion to second. Anything that we want to note, add, correct?
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions, board.
I would move that we accept the personnel actions as presented.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Big claims week this week. I used to have a rule that I set out anything over $1 million, but I won't.
No, there's a lot. When I went through them, I noticed, we've got some big purchases of equipment for secondary roads on there, for one thing.
Yep.
Over $300,000 worth. So.
Oh, and there's a beautiful new road on 600. Those of you going back and forth between Ames and Nevada, take a detour or drive 600. It's as good a road as we got in Story County.
Yep.
Did you make a motion?
I make a motion that we accept them as presented.
Thank you. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda, board.
Yes. Move as approved. Or move as presented.
I would second.
Motion and second. Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It takes us to public hearing items. Consideration of Resolution 1818 expressing intent to authorize tax income revenue loan agreement in the amount of $1,500,000. Leanne Harder and possibly Mike Cox.
Morning, Leanne.
Morning.
Make sure the square is picking you up. But let's say we got both in the same spot.
I'll just flip over here. Good on.
And Chris, while she's moving, I did happen to notice, do we only have one square up here?
Yeah, I think these weren't working.
Oh, okay.
You can join me if you like. Well, it's that time of year, again, that we are, we did this about a year ago. 13 some odd months ago. What's before you today is a resolution that sets the stage for the county treasurer, Renee Tweet, to go ahead and receive proposals for up to $1.5 million to establish the Urban Renewal Tax Increment Revenue Bond, Series 2017. Sorry, I have to read that and make sure I get the language correct. Today is the public hearing approving the resolution. Then it sets forth a 15-day appeal period that the decision today can be appealed to district court. Through that time, Renee cannot do anything. She can begin to discuss options with local institutions. But according to the schedule that was adopted by the board, that actually official date to solicit bids will be 8/24. And then on September 5th, Renee, a treasurer tweet, will be presenting responses from the institutions. And then later, the following week, you'll actually select an institution and set the loan agreement. So it's $1.5 million for phase two of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. Do you have any questions?
Questions for Leanne. I'll start with this. I think it's important to underscore anybody who's not been paying attention for the last 13 months and comes in and says, oh, my God, the county wants to borrow 1.5. What's going on? These are future revenues from the increase in valuation, primarily from all the wind towers that you see around Story County, but also some additional properties. The previous board made the commitment that Story County would fund up to $4 million of improvements as part of the research park, and determined that its preferred mechanism to do it, this is the previous board, preferred mechanism to do it was through tax increment financing, and in fact did fund the first phase of that $1.5 million using tax increment financing. This board has indicated willingness to at least explore that option. And so we've been moving ahead. This is not the final step. This does not commit the county. This is simply the step that's required in order for us to go out and see what the market looks like, what our rates would be, and what the impacts would be. But we, to this point, we've been moving ahead, thinking that we would, in fact, fund phase two via tax increment financing. That could still change. Laura Smarty, anything to add?
Already had a bite at this one. I have no discussions. Continuing from last year at this point, to me, this is formality of continuation of the commitment we made in 16.
I have no questions.
Okay, super. So in that case, Mike, anything you want to add before we open the public hearing? We'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody who would like to address Resolution 1818. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I would move that we approve resolution number 1818, expressing intent to authorize a tax increment revenue loan agreement in the amount not to exceed $1.5 million.
I would second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1818 passes. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep. Additional items, discussion and consideration of a quote between ACS and Information Technology for software analysis at $4,800.
Morning, Barb.
Barb.
Good morning, Board. Barb Steinbeck, Information Technology. I'm bringing to you today a quote to review some software that has been written at the Justice Center for use in the jail. It's the JMS program. After several discussions, originally I was told that the person who wrote this was under contract, but I found that wasn't true. And as this came up in a finding during our security assessment, I really wanted to make sure this is not a trained programmer. This is somebody who did it on his own. I have concern for the security of this program. There is no security built into it at all, so I've asked ACS to give me a quote to evaluate the software, and then after we review the findings, then we would decide what the next steps are. Do you have any questions on the quote?
So my question would be, have you visited with the sheriff since this software primarily impacts him? And what can you tell us about your conversation?
The sheriff is totally, and I just had another conversation last week, he's totally in agreement with this. He did point out to me that he understands this person is not a trained IT professional and that it does need some review. And he said after you review it, then that's another discussion.
Okay.
And I wanted to make clear to them, I'm not trying to take away the ease with which this program gains them access to information. That what it does is it pulls information from a program called JMS, which is part of the Public Safety OSSI package. And it is, I agree, it's a poorly written program. Doesn't give you a lot of information without a lot of clicks and screen changes. So this basically pulls the information from that database and puts it in a format that they all feel comfortable with and they like. So I don't want to take that away. I just want to make sure that it's secure and it's managed correctly. Now, I should point out that ACS is also the company who wrote the program for us for the CLP information, and I thought that was well written. And once we got to the final product, a really good bang for our buck.
I noted, I think just last week, that within the last 10 days or 2 weeks, I had been out to Master Control and watched staff use this program, and it had been explained to me, and I understand your concern about having any program touch the system, if you will, pull from, you know, where there is not adequate security. Can you give me a little more background, because I believe we've been using this program for a few years, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It was being used before I came here. Yep. And
more than a few years.
Yes. A lot of years. And I'm not sure what program you're referring to. He has created two programs.
I'm talking about Jail Helper.
So, yes, this would be the Jail Helper, and there's also budget management software that I don't feel that's as big a concern as this is, since it touches outside software and our databases.
Right, the budget manager is in-house. It's a way that the sheriff's office has found to effectively manage their own budget,
right.
But it's not pulling information from outside.
No.
This one is pulling information from outside,
exactly.
Giving us a potential security loophole.
It is, and during my discussions about the security on the software, it was told to me that since we have so many firewalls and switches and antivirus, there is no need for security in the software. However, that's not true because we have 270 open doors to the outside. We are the weakness in the system. And if one of us gets a virus, that's going to find an open door, and this software presents no security, so it's just like a wide open path.
Well, and we don't know exactly what ACS would find.
Exactly.
We're wanting to see what they
want to be safe.
Or, sorry.
Oh, sure. So do we pay the employee who still works for us, and the person who developed this, do we pay a yearly fee then, or
no?
Okay.
I was told this program was developed at home on the employee's free time. That's not true. It's managed daily on the computer. IT has offered some hardware to support this in order to keep it going. I would just like to make sure that that could be phase two being addressed. The board did sign an intellectual rights contract with this employee, which we probably need to review depending on what our findings are.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
This would be phase one. So we right now there's so many questions. We just need to know where we're at on it.
Yeah, this is just gathering information, and depending on what information we gather, this could be a big, deep, controversial conversation. We just got to see what kind of information we get.
Well, I think we need to know what we don't know.
Exactly. Okay. And what I liked, it had always been a concern for me, but what really brought it home to me is in the security assessment when it was brought up as a finding. So if it seems bad to me, it's bad to the outsiders too. So we want to make sure that we're protected and safe. I'd hate to see something like this that we think is a useful tool suddenly become, what brings us down, and we don't want that. It's a small thing, but they tend to balloon when it comes to cybersecurity.
And it's a non-budgeted item, correct?
It is.
Yeah. Okay.
But we're going to try to handle it within our
Yes,
budget.
We are.
Okay. And would that go to IT's budget or the sheriff's budget?
Go to IT's budget.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thanks, Barb.
You're welcome.
If there's no further questions, Marty, I don't mean to...
No, sure. I just listened to the IT director tell me that she has a concern about a program that we're using that could possibly cause, if not issues, catastrophic problems to the county. And I think a reasonable person would say that it would be dollar well expended. And do you have a time frame for which this would come back to us with the analysis roll-up?
Well, the quote does ask for a two-week lead time to prepare. We've already had some phone conversations with them, and they know what to expect. There were five different types of code being used in the program. There's 8,000 lines, which is pretty extreme. So they already know what to expect. They've asked for 2 weeks to prepare, and then another 2 weeks to finish their findings. So we're talking in a month or so, I should come back with some information.
Okay. Well, I've heard enough that I would move consideration of the quote between ACS and Information Technology for Software Analysis for $4,800 for the IT department to study this program.
I would second.
Motion second. Further discussion?
None.
Sheedy.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Barb.
Thank you, Barb.
I just want to also point out they're asking that each page be initialed as well as the signature page be signed.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Thank you.
Yeah, Barb. Have a good day.
You too.
Next item is consideration of request for proposal, manual, and guidelines. We've been working on this for a while.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
I'm sorry, my voice is not, for some reason today it's being weaker than normal. What is before you is a second draft. I think it was probably in May or April I brought the initial draft to the board. Sent it then out to department heads and elected officials, and did receive some very good feedback. And hopefully incorporated all the comments and recommended suggestions. Thank you to everyone that gave me grammatical information, guidance. Spell check, for some reason, even when you put RPF, it says it's still correct instead of RFP. So I appreciate that. Beyond words. I did receive a suggestion from an elected official that we clarify in the guidelines that it's a recommendation for elected officials to use. And so that is in right on page 3 in the purpose of the manual. And again, same elected official recommended not only do you reference the procurement policy, purchasing policy of Story County, but put that right up front too. As a reminder that we follow, all of us follow the procurement policy or purchasing policy. Those changes were made, and then mostly grammatical from that point on.
just some reorganization. I'm not going to go through each section. I kind of did that when we first saw it. The organization, for a large part, is still the same. But I would suggest that we follow the process. I think Chairman Sanders said this initially when this was brought to you, that we follow the process similar to what we do for policies. Mm-hmm. Have you take action today, pending a seven-day review period, and then bring it back for official action next Tuesday. In the meantime, I'll send it back out for review and help people understand it's a guideline, a manual. I've been helping a lot of individual departments as they do RFPs, and this would be something I could then share with them too. And
it's a resource.
Yeah.
And gives us the opportunity to have a little more consistency in how we do this. Board questions, comments, things you'd like to see changed in here before hopefully we approve it and send it out for seven-day review?
I look at page three, and I just had a question in regards to, as our stated belief is the purpose of the RFP process is not necessarily to yield the cheapest price, but rather identify the vendor that provides the county with the most advantageous combination of price and other factors as well. Are we bound by code to take the cheapest bid?
Not necessarily.
Okay, that's a good answer.
I had a couple of questions on page 10. That's where we actually lay out the process. Number two, it says Board of Supervisors advises County Officer Department of Process. I took that to mean whether we were going to go with a request for information first, right? So I was accurate in that interpretation. Okay, thank you. And then and number 12, contract negotiations with one or more vendors. What if the contract negotiations themselves fail for some odd reason? Do we go with the second person or second entity that we've already, maybe vetted, or do we have to reopen the entire process?
It's going to depend on the type of project for which the request for proposal or whoever has gone out for to receive bid.
Okay.
And you might have a case where you only had one solicitor, too. So in that case,
right, but generally, it would fall to the contracting entity, in most cases, Board of Supervisors, to determine whether that next highest scoring bidder should get the bid. And I think the flexibility, in most cases, would lie with us.
Okay, so neither one of those are changes. They were questions that
sure.
were coming in. Then on to page, what page is this then? Talk about committee formation. Sorry about that. It seemed like it was 12, but maybe. Yeah, here we go. It's page 12, committee meetings. Should we include in here a sentence that notes that the committee meetings could be required to be open to the public under the open meetings law?
Could, but that is going to be dependent in and of itself, right? So
right, who we appoint to that committee.
Correct, and then whether we have a sentence in here or not, we are going to be really, really clear that when we do, this one is required to follow those.
Okay, so then I have no recommended changes based upon discussion. Anyway, good job. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no...
I was just going to ask on just kicking the can down the road on a revisit on a timeline as far as, the adoption of this document. I mean, did you foresee a time where, as things age, they sometimes need refresh?
At the minimum, this needs to be reviewed on an annual basis to make sure the appendices are all accurate.
Okay.
The process still makes sense. It'll go on the internet. I'd like to approach it similar, though, that we do the COOPCOG, too. On a quarterly basis, someone is responsible to making sure no cleanup needs to occur, and then if it does, bring it back to the board. But on the minimum, it's an annual basis review.
So then a reasonable expectation of the board is that if and when this is finally adopted, it would automatically become part of your work program
to do
the revert.
Yes.
Is that fair?
That's how I've been operating.
Okay.
It started out in my work program. I see it's very similar to strategic plan, CFP, COOPCOG, etc.
If there are no further questions, I'd love a motion to adopt pending seven-day review.
Motion. I would move that we adopt the RFP manual pending 7-day review.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
It passes. Lynn, you will send this out to everybody? Thank you. No agency reports today. We do have our friend Joe Quaker with IRVM. Talk to us about all the good things growing in Story County. No show and tell today, and he doesn't even have a goatee today.
I'm disappointed.
Wow, yeah. I mean, not only do you not have anything growing, you don't have anything growing.
Running for office, I think sheriff.
Wow.
Not in this county, though. I don't think it worked. Maybe just a township trustee. So I did bring some things. They're outside. I had a heck of a time getting them through the elevator. Those of you.
Okay.
We have Joe's with the props. Just want to say before you start, bit of a celebrity. We had Ringgold County up here last week, and they had seen Joe do a presentation, and they were raving about how he spoke to them in the group. And it was nice to hear that we have a program that exists, that we have the ability to take into another venue and take away as they think. They want to know our story as maybe make it their story.
Yep.
This made me blush. Well, I was red already. It was good medicine to have those guys up. And you know, IRVM is a pretty stable thing throughout the state, and it's a good thing to have. And more counties are figuring that out. So, and thanks for your folks' input on that as well. So I have like four sections here. I'm going to talk about quickly some year-end numbers and then some drainage ditch maintenance things that are going on, and then the current roadside happenings that we're doing, maintenance right now, and then what's coming up. So year-end numbers. So I think, what, Mike, the 15th, we need to have our annual report in. I do have some numbers, and I'm not going to really go through all of them or compare them to the 25-year average, but I'm just going to throw some things out there. So, you know, we promote native vegetation, and the board supports that. It's a great thing. I hope folks have seen some of the color out there in the roadside as they drive around, the native plants. They do a lot of good things. We're probably over, if I did the math, about 1,500 acres planted in Story County's rights-of-way. I'm not quite sure the math of how many acres we have left. We just plant as projects come up. There's probably about 45 to 5,500 acres of roadsides in Story County, depending on the right-of-way width and things.
Yep.
So we're getting there. Last year, in FY17, we had about 44 sites. And a lot of those were smaller. That's a good average. We do 44 to 60. That means we follow Darren's crews around the road department and see it after they're done. Most of those were smaller sites, so we only averaged about 20 acres, but still there's a lot of mobility involved in getting equipment around. It'll be quite different this year since we have 600th going in and some of the new road south of Gilbert, and it's dry. They're doing a lot of dirt work out there and upgrading the road system, so we'll be busy. And now is not a good time to plant. It's just a little too dry.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to wait for it to cool down a little bit. September, probably start in on it hard. For burning, Marty, we talked about upgrading that. We did about eight to ten sites, kind of depends on how you add them up. The big one was we burned prescribed fire on the west side of R-38, pretty much from as much as we could from Ames all the way down to Slater. And that was a roadside that we planted into natives in the late, like, 2008 or 9 when they redid that road. And that thing looks really nice right now. If you got to go that direction, drive down R-38 and take a look. It looks pretty good. There's some brush we need to control. Folks want to know about roadside spraying. We did an average of about 200 centerline miles. So a centerline mile is one half of the mile. So 200. So we covered about 400 miles. But and for brush, we did about 122, which is pretty good. I don't think we're going to hit that this year. And that doesn't count our contract sprayers. That's just in-house. If you remember when CRP really took off last year or in FY16, we helped out about 45 landowners or producers in Story County for over 1,200 acres of rentals, you know, our equipment that we rent out. This year, it's a little lower. The farm bill isn't quite all the way 100% figured out, but we still did help out 13 folks for about 170 acres. And those old red combines that are in the pole barn harvested 372 pounds of usable seed, which we use back in the roadsides and some of the open spaces that the conservation seems to be acquiring on occasion. Any questions?
No.
Great. All right, so I'll keep it moving. Let's just hop right into drainage ditch stuff. So we, the board is aware we sent out some letters to all landowners that own property adjacent to the open ditch, okay? We did that to give them a heads up. I've been calling them, letting them know that we're going to do some maintenance. We do send letters out, and this isn't new, but the way I worded it is a little new. It's, we need access, please, in order to do our work. And if there's not access, call me. And we've had a lot of good commentary this morning up until 10 o'clock. It's been really good. A lot of good ideas from our landowners and operators. Most of them are on board. We will not be able to access every area we want this fall, but we're making adjustments to do it next year. They're really wanting to.
And let's clarify, we could take that. By code, we could have access anywhere we wanted to get.
Right.
But it might not be the best neighborly policy to go and destroy some crops. And so we're working through what the right way to do that is, but still have the access we need.
Correct. And those conversations have been really great. I think I wrote in here lots of good feedback. I was going to say good, but I said it's really been a great thing. And in most cases, we're getting there. We're over the hump of when I'd be, we're not getting any buffer strips in, but there's a lot of commentary in that direction of buffering our open ditches, not just for access, but just to have, you know, better land sustainability and clean water and air, things like that. Any questions on the drainage ditch? So,
when you're not getting access, is it because there's crop?
Correct.
Right up, that's
yes.
Right up to the ditch.
Okay. And, you know, some of the areas are landlocked. So they may have a buffer strip or an access lane big enough to, you know, to drive a pickup or a sprayer or whatever we're using. But there's not a driveway to easily get there right off the road. So we'd have to drive a quarter mile through their field to get to that. So those are some things we're finding out. And that will continue through probably the second week of September. I would assume that as hot, it's not so hot today, but as dry, our trees are going to start going to bed early this year, you know. So we want to control them as soon as we can. And they'll start losing leaves, I assume, the first couple weeks of September. Some of the species, cottonwoods and willows.
Right, and so the board is clear, once they start losing their leaves, you can still get in and treat, but it's a different process, and it's a more costly and not as effective a process.
You can no longer foliar spray. Yeah, it's a whole other deal. A little more labor intensive, for sure. With that, so there's no any more questions on drainage ditches?
No.
Okay. As far as, and that's Tyler. Tyler's out there doing that today, Grant 13. Okay. So my staff that I have in roadsides, we are spraying roadsides brush in primarily Nevada and Grant Township. You know how we go through the levels. So Nevada, you know, the middle of the county hasn't been hit for 3 or 4 years. So we're starting to get a little more pressure, a few more calls. So we're trying to hit the middle of the county. But with that, if you notice, we it's been a pretty good fruit bearing year for our walnuts and our oak trees, which is good. A lot of the branches are hanging low, and harvest is coming up. So we're trying to go out today, this afternoon, actually, and tomorrow, the next day, and pull prune some of the limbs that are hanging down and hit the tractor cabs that they've called in. You know, they're going to be hitting combines. We just want to kind of prune it up another level. Mm-hmm. We chip that and chip it back into the ditch, which the amount that we're chipping is really not going to do. You know, it's not like we have need a big chipping truck and haul away a lot of chips. It's just a few branches. So that's what's going on. The brush contractor, by the way, hasn't started yet. He's shooting for another week. So we do not have him in. But he has time. And once they mobilize, he said they could get it done within 2 weeks, a week and a half of their days, which is 6 days a week. So a week and a half.
So done in August.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'll keep you posted. We did send a press release out, by the way, to the public to let them know there's going to be some spraying in those townships. Mm-hmm. So.
Who is just that? Do you do it through Erica in conservation?
Correct.
Or do you,
okay. Yep. Erica, we kind of have one on file, but we upgraded a little bit, you know, obviously on what townships we're doing. And so Erica helps with that, absolutely. A lot of people help me, she's one of them. We did get 600 planted with oats, and believe it or not, it's growing. You can see drill rows. So, and that stabilizes things. No permanent seed is in there yet. I didn't want to do that until we get a little moisture. I should mention that it's not 100% final, but since the paperwork isn't signed, but I did write some grant asking, some grant request to the Living Roadway Trust Fund to help partially fund a Kubota UTV with a cab with heat, so in the winter we can drive down these open ditches instead of a pickup. And also a seed tumbler, which mixes our seed, instead of a scoop on the floor, and then a herbicide storage cabinet. So we pretty much 80% funded through the grant process on that. And that paperwork will come through these folks. Those are budgeted.
There you
go.
Even better.
Thank you.
Again, those are budgeted.
Your department with needs, and this is something that addresses those. So
we're getting there. We're catching up. It was what? It was a good 15 years before we had bought any new equipment for you until 3 or 4 years ago, and now we've been finally starting to make some headway on the deferred maintenance issues that you had driving that. What? It was a 1996. Truck that
I saw it in Maxwell yesterday. It's still running. Hopefully it doesn't shut off when you turn the headlights on now. True story, right, Mike? So we're going to put the brush stuff away, the cutting and the spraying, in a few weeks, a month, 4 weeks. The weed commissioner duties will start to come again, okay? Fall is a great time to control Canada thistle, although we don't do it much. Typically, we're kind of geared to spray when they're purple. That's when you see them. But the fall's the best time. And I've had made some commitments to other landowners that the board has talked to and I've talked to since we missed the window this year, I'm going to have them on site and we're going to work together on the areas of concern. There's some historic city area, some in the Collins area. I'm going to meet them out there and we're going to drive around and look and just work together on these things. So.
Well, great customer service that you provide, Joe. It's actually one of the real benefits, many benefits for us being at the county fair, I believe. But one of them was it was an opportunity for farmers. Marty, I know you experienced this. I did several times. Farmers come up and just ask us questions, and we seem to be a huge topic of those conversations.
Isn't that crazy? So now comes the educational part of the program of the show. I'll be right back.
If there's any allergies in the room, you may want to move.
He's bringing nature to us. We don't go, you know. Muhammad is bringing them out.
Don't hit Austin.
So I'll start with some neat stuff. A lot of folks think this is a. You want right here? Good enough.
Yeah,
great.
There's no allergies with this one. This is Compass plant. It's a native, okay? We plant this. You see them out there now. Marty, they're on your road going to your place.
Yeah.
This could be mistaken as a sunflower or something bad, but it's really a neat plant. It does grow this tall and taller. It's kind of the tree of the prairie. It's a silphium. It's really stemmy. So you'll see when they die that, you know, the red-winged blackbirds sit on this. The thing about Compass plant, which way is north? That way? So they kind of orientate their leaves east and west to catch the sun.
Huh.
So if you ever get lost out there.
Are those forbs on that plant?
No.
Here. Okay. Just trying to learn the lingo that you did.
Yep. There are thorns on this one, Marty. I brought this one in, and you can see right off that it's a thistle. Okay. Back in the 40s, this is in the cerium family. So when they wrote the weed law, all cerium species are noxious. Okay. But this is a native thistle. It's not like musk thistle or Canada thistle. It's white underneath. So white thistles underneath are native. It's actually very good nesting for some birds like bull thistle. The seed is good. These turn purple. This is field thistle. Actually, this is tall thistle. But we get a lot of calls on this when people see these. They're purple. They don't really impact, in my opinion, the economics of the producer. I mean, they're visually, we're trained not to like these.
Uh-huh.
But again, if you were to go out and control these, in my mind, it wouldn't be the best way to use our funding. Last but not least is why I spray, or we try to control the brush. One, two, three. Right? You count the rings. This is a three-year-old re-sprout where we've cut, and we do treat the stumps. This is why, if the public would ask why we're going back in.
These are drainage ditches.
For maintenance on drainage ditches and or roadsides. This is about the perfect height, the maximum height, a little taller maybe, where we do our foliar spray. Okay, so this is why we're out there, because if we don't, now
we're
back
to
that labor-intensive thing that we talked about. We're cutting. And this is a box elder tree, which is in the maple family. Why, you ask? Because these are opposite, so maple family. So a little bit of teaching today.
Outstanding.
Any questions?
Loris wants all those in her office. You just take them on back.
I was sitting in there thinking about this. I have left plants in my office, okay?
So how much bigger can that those trees get before spraying does not become an option?
So I think
just brought in a three-year-old rather large sapling.
A couple more years we have to cut it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Depends on the weather.
Right.
But you start using more herbicide. We want to be wise. By the way, I need to say that our herbicides are that we use in the open ditches where there is water are registered for aquatic. So, you know, and all our applicators are licensed.
Absolutely.
I want to make sure I cover that.
100%. Questions for Joe?
By the way, so Joe and Tyler built a new sprayer mount for the back of the tractor, which is outstanding. I was just thinking about it, Joe. I think you and Tyler need to go to work on building a sprayer mount for the back of a canoe. And then when we have water in some of these ditches, you can just go right down the middle and spray both sides. I'd work on that.
I'd kind of like a pontoon boat with a cooler.
See you
a pontoon boat for those ditches.
Before you leave, Joe, one of the things that I saw, and I live right next to you, and I did not even know it there, but talk about your weed seed stash. And I know I'm saying it in kind of a not the best parlance, but I mean, you have quite a story there, and we're good steward in the fact that we keep other people's seed.
So we have a temperature-controlled seed room, and we have some projects that are ongoing with the City of Ames and also at the Research Park and also at Jordan Acres. And so, you know, we write grants for that seed. We budget for it either way. And when we purchase it, sometimes the projects aren't ready to go that day. And so we store that in our temperature-controlled room, and not everyone has that. So it's humidity and temperature. We try to keep below 100, so about 70 degrees and
68 and about 40% humidity, and that keeps our seed good. And that's, you know, very important. A lot of people don't understand that if you let your seed dry out and whatnot, you know, your plantings aren't going to be as good.
Right. Well, you got substantial bags if you were to look around the corner in his small shed, and it's just like I did not know that, that what that room's for. So
it's our seed storage area, and every now and then I'll catch a Somerset in there cooling down.
Well, Mike and Joe and staffs are working so hard to get us to more native as many places as possible. The other thing that, that might be worth mentioning, at least as I understand it, and maybe I'm missing here, but I think we're going to utilize some of our in-house seed as we start talking about doing the research park and trying to utilize some of that to get all that done. Speak toward the square thing, Mike. The square microphone, just so we pick it up.
Over here.
Morning, Mike.
I wasn't going to let you get away without coming up. See, for the you avoided the public hearing.
No, as we, yeah, we, I mean, we've been talking about, you guys are well aware, as Joe's mentioned, you've got, what, 300-some pounds of seed off of our combine runs last year, those old combines. You know, I mean, credit to Joe for keeping those things running. We're at that point where we're discussing, really, is this feasible for us to try to keep these old machines going?
Yeah.
For the amount of seed we get. So, so we're having that discussion, trying to determine if that's something we should keep doing. One of the problems is it's getting so hard to, it kind of goes in ebbs and flows. At the moment, it's been really hard to find, to purchase seed, and to purchase seed that's local ecotype specifically. You know, we have the Palmer amaranth problem in so many of the seed suppliers. Plus, there's just been so much demand for prairie seed, for native grass and forb seed. That's been hard to come by, and so we rely quite heavily on our what we refer to as combine run or our harvesting our own prairies, something that Joe's been intimately familiar with for a number of years, and partially why he's clean shaven today.
Yeah, a lot of dust involved with that too.
Our new respirator program, Joe was at fit testing for that.
Didn't fit as well with all the facial hair, huh?
No, no. And when they put the cyanide gas in there, I choked a little bit. But I came out of it.
Sure.
But having said that, you know, no, we are, in any of our new new plantings, we're looking at both combine run or local sourced seed, as well as if we can augment that with purchase seed. And so specifically on the research park or Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor, we did receive a grant for through the pollinator program, USDA pollinator program, to get some seed purchased for that, so we have some of the, that facility will be partially purchased seed and partially combined seed. So Joe talks about the seed room, and I think right now it's probably full to the brim with various with all of our seed.
Yeah.
So.
Outstanding.
I'm hoping still to get whatever information. I guess Marty, did you make it out there?
Yeah, for a brief time. I got one out, said hi.
Turned into one of those. They were 20 questioning Joe about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what Ringgold on a takeaway basis, what I suggested to them that I think was a tangible that they might take up, was the fact that we take for granted we bring our department people in and speak to us. They don't do that. So on a going forward basis, in a county of 5,100 people. 5,100 people. They don't. They have a completely different approach to what we're doing. They saw the merit in the presentation Joe gave, thinking that possibly this is something that they'd like to see on a smaller scale introduced down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought part, you know, and then through the course of the conversation, it was just like, bring the guy who was going to do this, but he was there, to the board so that the media can cover it and get the story out there to prime the pump that possibly this would be a reason for appropriations to start doing this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
and then it was one of those things that you had a really, Joe could tell us much better than I because I wasn't there for that long, but obviously they talked to you. We were talking to you before they were talking to you.
I was wore out by 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I think they went to Hickory Park. They really wanted to go eat at Hickory Park.
So, that's good.
It was a good day.
Anything else for these guys? Thank you.
No, thank you.
Good
guys.
Job.
I believe that Marty gets to go first this week on liaison assignments.
I would touch on something Rick said at the beginning of the meeting. Thank you, Austin, for your time here. I can't say how the time that I've been here that, you know, I read what you write, and it sounds like the meetings I went to, and it gets out in the community such that I don't have to take a lot of undue time explaining what was, because you wrote it in a way that I think is very consumable. You will be missed. ADC, keep doing multiple visits. Got one here for an eclectic housing project in the county that we will talk more about later. I got a DCAT meeting. Crestview is an evolving issue that it's a stay tuned basis, as always. And I'd like to thank facilities. Don't miss the chance to look at the wall behind us here that takes into account the 50-year anniversary that we just celebrated here in the building.
Wow, that is very nice. That is our story.
Yeah. We host the regional mental health in this room. And as the supervisors from nine other counties and respective staff go through it, they are just shocked to find out this is a 50-year-old building. Mm-hmm. So I think it speaks to the stewardship that was provided by people before us and the commitment that has been made to continue to keep it in this state.
100%. Thanks, Marty. Laura.
Kind of a short report from me. This is always my down week, the first full week where there aren't meetings. So it's catch-up week for me in the office, et cetera. I did go to the Story County Opioid Task Force yesterday, and Community and Family Resources has received a grant from Iowa Public and Department of Health to take a look at doing some kind of either drug clinic or some kind of drug treatment program that would include actually providing Suboxone, which is kind of like the methadone for some opioids, meaning that it is the substitute as people are trying to get off of it. And it is an 8-county grant covering CFRs 8 counties, but we will be working with YSS. I say we because I'm on the CFR board too, because YSS has the prevention up to age 24 in Boone and Story County. So it's an $80,000 grant. The key here is that it is very quick turnaround time to set up. And they are looking at how they're going to get all of this done to pull in the funding in time because they have to do a needs assessment. So as I turn that information over to Deb and Carla, they weren't there yesterday, so I'm sure that they might be asked some things. Marty, I have a question for you. I saw in a report from HRDA that did Aging Resources, have they reduced their staff?
They've had to. They're just in reflection of the budget drawbacks of the state of Iowa.
Okay.
So they are right-sizing them. Joel Pola, the program director, is incensed, but he's doing it in a quiet, professional manner. And they, are an agency in flux because they don't know where they... I mean, they're having quiet conversations on the backside to think like, well, we don't want to cut any further than we have to, but knowing the conversations that's being held at the state level as to where the dollars are, they're thinking like they'd rather be proactive with their staff to reflect that if there's a chance for somebody to take an early retirement, get a buyout, or make a career change of their choosing at a time of their choosing. Mm-hmm. They have proposed doing that, and they've seen that it is not the best of situations.
Just kind of wondered, and it showed up on HRDA's agenda because, of course, HRDA provides a lot of transportation.
It is
for
not
older
the
people, so.
Agency right now that has a good feel about where they are because they don't know, in fact, what the future looks for them, and they perceive it to be a dark place.
Yes, we'll have to watch due to asset and funding going forward what happens there.
Yeah.
So that's it for me.
Super. For me, if you see smoke in the sky just west of Ames, was in the field all morning this morning, burned a stack of stover intentionally, and will be burning some more tomorrow. They won't let me actually light it on fire. I can't understand why, but interesting to watch as we try to figure out the right way to deal with the stover piles that we have here in Story County and the pot will come in at some point and give us a full report on all their findings over the last year. And I'll just say this, they've been great to work with. They've been a great community member and partner. This is a tough deal. They're doing something that has never been done before anywhere. And, of course, you're going to run into some problems when anytime you do that. Mm-hmm. But the way they're going about it and the resources that they're putting in to try to identify best practices when no practices exist currently, it is really encouraging, and so I'll be in the field all morning again tomorrow morning trying to work through that. If there's nothing else,
I have a question.
Sure.
I did notice, is it time to set legislative priorities? I noticed that you had had that on your...
Deb and I went and met with Drew and just talked through kind of where things are. We've asked that Drew reach out to every elected official and have a conversation with them, so it will be an individual kind of conversation with each elected official, was my understanding. Deb, did you have the same understanding?
All right, got it, rather than a set it. Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Anything further? If not, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 And Austin, you're done, man. Sorry to keep you so long on your final day.